Welcome, everyone, to episode 223 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to check in on all four of the conference semifinals series. We're going to start with Toronto-Philly, and then we'll hit Milwaukee-Boston, Denver-Portland, and we'll wrap up with Warriors-Rockets. We're recording this on Friday, just to give you an idea of when we're taking part in this series. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian, but I'm not doing as well as Kawhi Leonard.
Is he doing well?
He's kind of doing well, yeah.
Well, I mean, he personally is doing well. The rest of his teammates are not.
Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about Kawhi specifically. Yeah,
I did see he went for some 1 a.m. Consolation cookies last night, which is pretty hilarious. He and Kyle Lowry in the mean streets of Philly were binge eating cookies to drown their feelings.
So basically, I have to at least guess here. Kawhi took Kyle out for cookies to let him know easily, you know, you're not going to get any more shots this series. Yeah, I'm going to take everyone.
It was the, it's not you, it's me, but really it's you breakup talk.
I think so.
Mm-hmm, with basketball.
So can we jump into this immediately? Because I've been dying to talk to you about this.
Okay.
Last summer when the Raptors traded for Kawhi, right? Mm-hmm. You and I talked about, what should they do with Kyle Lowry? Should they keep him, or should they move him because he was kind of upset about the whole DeMar DeRozan thing? Plus, he hadn't stepped up in the playoffs, yada, yada, yada. And you and I were like, well, let's see how it goes.
Uh-huh.
And then he played fairly well in the regular season. And now, once again in the playoffs, he's looking like, well, not Kyle Lowry. Which just begs the question, Brian, is he solely a regular season player?
I don't think it's necessarily fair. I just think, I mean, we brought this up prior to the series. Philly's size was one of the big advantages here. The smallest guy in the rotation is J.J. Redick now, because T.J. McConnell hasn't gotten minutes outside of garbage time in the series. So Kyle Lowry, who I think you said was generously listed at like 6'1", there's just no place to hide him defensively, and it's hard for him. Like, Jimmy Butler has been on him for the last two games. It's hard for him to get going as a scorer against a guy who has all defensive team potential and is 7 inches bigger than him.
I don't disagree with that at all. Even so, you still have some sort of, you know, a level of expectation when you're dealing with an all-star player.
Yeah.
So while I get that, I still think to some extent that if you're angling to keeping Kawhi, which, let's be honest, you know, Toronto is absolutely in on Kawhi and should be, because that's just logical, then you should have foreseen this. Like, you've had so many years with Lowry in the fold. So if you know that size messes him up in the playoffs, like, then it shouldn't come as a surprise.
Right. I mean, so let's get into just what's happened in the series in general, because the tenor after game three last night is a complete 180 from what it was after game one this past Saturday. You know, like, in game one, Kawhi scores 45, Pascal Siakam scores 29. The Raptors didn't need all that much from anyone else. It was 108-95, and it wasn't as close as the final score would indicate. I mean, it looked like the Raptors were just going to blow the Sixers out of the water in this series. Game two, Jimmy Butler turns into James Butler, as Brett Brown says. It was the adult in the room, which is one of my favorite phrases of his. You know, they gut out a low-scoring game. It was 94-89. Joel Embiid's hobbled by gastroenteritis, or as he called it, the shits, in his post-game press conference. Which,
remember to bleep that.
No, it was a direct quote. So
true.
That's saying. And I just loved Jimmy's reaction in the post-game press conference when Joe says that, and he's just like, Joe, don't get in trouble. So, yeah, I mean, it was a close game. Then they come back to Philly last night for game three, and it's just an absolute rout. I mean, the thing is, it was close enough. Like, The Raptors kept it within striking distance up until the fourth quarter, but it never, like, I mean, I was nervous the whole time because I'm just that type of person, but, like, it felt worse than it was score-wise even through the first three quarters, and then the fourth quarter just comes, and, you know, they go on, like, a 21-2 run. Joel Embiid is windmill dunking and airplane riding down the court and doing the Allen Iverson cup to the ear thing. I mean, they fed off – the crowd fed off them. They fed off the crowd. It escalated very quickly. So I think, like, honestly, my biggest surprise in this series through three games is Brett Brown. He entered the playoffs under a lot of pressure. There was a lot of speculation that if they don't make the Eastern Conference Finals, he's getting fired, which, you know, I've long said that was unfair. But
yeah,
that's kind of what team owner Josh Harris implied, even what Elton Brand kind of implied heading into the playoffs. Through three games, I mean, they got shellacked in game one, and then he comes out in game two, totally changes his defensive scheme. He moves Ben Simmons on Kawhi, and he puts Embiid on Siakam. And Kawhi's getting his numbers, but it's been a lot more difficult for him the last two games. And then in game three, you figure, you know, they show that look in game two. Okay, Toronto's going to counter. So in game three, the Sixers counterpunch by going back to the original game one matchups in the first half and then going to the game two matchups in the second half. So it just seems like Brown has done a really good job keeping Nurse off balance in this series. That said, I do think there are some somewhat obvious counters that we should expect from Nurse in game four, but what do you think Nurse can do moving forward? I mean, Kawhi's been great. Siakam right. has been mostly, I mean, he's struggled with Embiid's length the last two games, but he's been the second best player on the Raptors by far.
Yeah.
Lowry has been, I mean, he was abysmal in game three. He put up 20 points in game two, but it was on 7 of 17 shooting. It was somewhat inefficient. And Marc Gasol, I mean, they're guarding Marc Gasol with Tobias Harris the last two games.
Like, yeah.
He's been doing nothing. So
and that's where it all started.
Yeah, so like, what do they need to do to get those two guys going?
I mean, look, I know it's old-fashioned. Get him into the damn post.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he has Tobias Harris on him, that should be barbecue chicken, right?
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're goading them into that because I think the Sixers are probably thinking, like, we can live with Gasol eating in the post if it means Kawhi and Siakam aren't going nuts from all over the floor. But like, Gasol's also a really good passer too, so if you just have him operating out of the post but as a passing hub as well, it feels like they should be able to generate easier looks than they have been. Like, Kawhi is just hitting a bunch of really well contested twos and he's nailing them because he's an absolute robot, but they're having to work too hard for this offense. And then when he goes to the bench, I think Micah Adams tweeted out the stat where they're just getting like absolutely annihilated every time Kawhi steps off the floor.
Right. Here's why. Only three players, and I'm being very, very generous when I'm saying this because I'm including Jody Meeks, who's played a grand total of 11 minutes, are shooting over 40% from the field in this series for Toronto's sake. If you remove Kawhi from the equation, I haven't really done the numbers, then it's really bad because Kyle Lowry, 35% shooting, Danny Green, 36%. Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, and Norman Powell all at a very, very lean 30%. And then you have Fred VanVleet, man, 63 minutes, 1 of 11, 0 for 7 from downtown. He has 4 points. He's shooting 9% from the field.
Yeah. I just did the math. Without remove Kawhi, Raptors as a team are shooting 36.4%.
There we go. So here's the thing. If you're Nick Nurse, right, and you even make the adjustments, but players just aren't making shots, should that count against you as a coach? I don't think so.
No, I mean, for Nurse, I feel like he did make the one adjustment. The first two games, he wasn't really matching Gasol's minutes with Embiid, and Embiid's trouble with Gasol is well documented. I mean, he seemed to figure something out in game three, but he did. Nurse did do a better job matching Gasol's minutes with Embiid in game three. It's just these Siakam-Lowry three bench lineups, every time they come out on the floor, the Sixers just annihilate them. but I don't know what you can do necessarily. I guess just you have to stagger it so one of... I mean, no, because, like, I was going to say stagger it so one of Kawhi and Siakam is on the floor at all times, but Siakam is on the floor in those lineups, and they're still getting blitzed. And even in that fourth quarter, when they started that run, it was Siakam, Lowry, and Gasol all on the floor at the same time. It was just Kawhi wasn't there, and the Sixers... You know, the Raptors couldn't generate any offense, and the Sixers finally got their transition game going, and it was off to the races.
Well, of course, because the team they had on the court shot 36%.
Right.
Like, shot making, you know, you and I talk about schemes a lot, but shot making, when it comes down to it, it's just so crucial.
Yeah.
Like, you can just turn a game by making a few shots in a row. Like, you've been on this point so many times before. Like, one bench guy can come in and just change the whole entire identity of a series by having one good game that swings the series, right?
Right.
And right now, we're seeing, you know, Kawhi trying to be that player. Not that he's ever a role player. He's obviously a super-duper star. But he's turned it into high gear. Like, he's trying to swing this series. Unfortunately, the attention that he gets, no one else seems to be able to feed off of that as well. I wonder if that's on Nurse or if it's just on you know, the players not being able to hit their shots. Whatever it is, it hasn't worked, and Philly's in the driver's seat, which is not a sentence I thought I'd say going into the series. I'm glad about something. There's something I'm really happy about. People were just crapping so much on Jimmy Butler for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not the same player. And, you know, I get the whole, you know, he's not a good person thing or whatever. Like, not a good teammate thing.
Yeah, locker room cancer, all that stuff. Yeah,
all that. I get it. But people's, you know, turned it into him not being a good player anymore. That was always, you know, a bad take. And he's proving this. He's proving it night in and night out. He's playing tough defense. He's switching and switching and switching. He's playmaking. He's getting to the line. He's doing everything. I mean, what more do you want out of him right now?
Here's how you know the sentiment has turned on Jimmy Butler. Because Spike Eskin, who co-hosts the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, he's been long saying, like, Jimmy Butler's a role player. Don't max Jimmy. Last night during the game, he was like, screw it. It's not my money. Pay him whatever you want.
I actually think I saw that tweet. Yeah.
It was good. On the Brown note, I want to shout out Adam Spinella of the Basketball Writers, who had a really good article heading into Game 3, kind of about the adjustments Brown had made going forward. And speaking of the Basketball Writers, Mort, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Are you tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the draft, and many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. They'll see you at bballwriters.com, and don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is THENBAPOD for 10% off. You can find, I've got an article going up tomorrow there about the Timberwolves and their new president of basketball operations, and I crap on Andrew Wiggins for 500 words. So more, you'll like it in particular.
Aww. See, I have had an effect on you over the past couple of years.
You have. So let's go back to finish up Raptors Sixers. So I think one of the key adjustments, if I'm Nick Nurse, the thing I'm doing, I'm putting Kawhi on Jimmy. I'm putting Pascal on Ben. Because I think you need to cut the head off the snake, basically. And his goal with Kawhi on Ben was Kawhi could play off of him and go in a free safety role. But Zach Lowe tweeted something really interesting today. Basically said, like, Ben's usage rate has plummeted in the playoffs, and he's basically turned into the Sixers version of Draymond Green, which is, like, kind of the perfect role for him if you think about it. Because, like, Jimmy is just so much more effective as a pick-and-roll ball handler than Ben just because of the shooting threat. So I think you need to stop that action. I think you'd much rather live with Ben killing you than Jimmy. But also, you have two elite defenders, you can just stop both of them and make Tobias Harris create, which, again, he can. I'm not saying this is a perfect solution. I mean, there's a non-zero chance you do this and Tobias goes off for 30, but what you're doing clearly in Game 3 especially did not work. I think you do need to try something else, and much like the Sixers after Game 1, like, we have two elite defenders with good size in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Let's put them on the Raptors' two best players and force these other guys to beat us. So I think that's, if I'm Nurse, that's where I'm going in Game 4.
Right. I would concur with that. So the thing is, regarding the Ben Simmons, Draymond ideology,
mm-hmm.
you're right. The fact that Ben is not the primary, you know, pick and roll initiator has opened up the court for Philly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we've been saying that for a while now. Like it, but Jimmy's not like a great 3-point shooter. Like, I think he's hitting like 28% from the series.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's some knockdown shooter like Redick. Right. But just the fact that he's somewhat of a threat and he's got the, you know, the ability to pull up for those mid range jump shots. Like, he's had a ton of them, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, when he's getting off a pick and he slips into that 15-17 foot area, like, he's dropping them.
Mm-hmm.
So that just opens up the entire court. And Simmons being able to lean back a little bit. And by the way, there's a stat to support Zach Lowe's claim here. Simmons has one free throw attempt in 115 minutes this series. Wow. I mean, he's leaning back, playing defense, rebounding, play initiating. You know, you're right. If he's going to be a souped up version of Draymond, like, suddenly that changes the entire identity, I want to say, of the Sixers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the decision to install Jimmy not only as the backup point guard against the Nets, but he's taken over a lot of the primary ball handling, and it's helping Ben save energy for defense, where, again, Kawhi is killing it. I mean, I know Brett Brown said, you know, he felt like Joel Embiid, or he has the best player in the series in Joel Embiid. Kawhi is averaging almost 38 points a game in this series. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to stop him, but if they can make like difficult for him, which they somewhat have in the past few games, in large part thanks to Ben, that is a win. And they're trying to force Kawhi into being a playmaker rather than a scorer, which he is. He can do it. He's just not. He doesn't make those decisions quickly enough, especially in a playoff setting. So,
right, you'd rather have him shoot if you're, you know, Nick Nurse, then you want him playmaking. Yeah.
Right. I also think Kawhi just needs to take 35 shots in Game 4. Like, I know he's trying to be unselfish and the Raptors are trying to be egalitarian, but if Lowry and Gasol don't have it going early, Kawhi literally, like, he kept them in it in that third quarter. I think he had 14 points on 6 of 6 shooting. And, like, again, all of these are, or most of them at least, were, like, hand in the face, mid-range jumper, three-pointer, right. Like, hard shots, and he's just nailing them. He needs to know, like, I am the alpha and the omega for my team right now, because for whatever reason, these role players are not getting it done, and, like, our best chance is if I take over.
He's going to look so good in a Clippers jersey next year,
so huh? So good. This is, oh, man, yeah, the only person who is happier about this series than Sixers fans is Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. That's true.
All right, let's move to Bucks-Celtics. It is tied 1-1 going into tonight. The Celtics just blew the Bucks out of the water in Game 1, and then the Bucks came roaring back in Game 2 and blew the Celtics out of the water. So it's hard to get a feel for this series. Just because, you know, they haven't really been close games either way. It's just the Bucks played very poorly in Game 1, and the Celtics were not great in Game 2. So what do you expect moving forward from this one?
Much of the same for Boston, really. I think they did a wonderful job in Game 1 with Horford on Giannis inside. Mm-hmm. Like, Horford just ate his lunch.
Yeah.
And that you know, he had the double block on Giannis when he was outreached. Like, that was just incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, Giannis didn't really shoot particularly well in Game 2. So, I mean, he did have a bounce back game,
mm-hmm.
but he hasn't had a game yet against this team where he's downright efficient.
Right.
That's a concern to me. I mean, if you're a Bucks fan out there and you have one horse you can really bet on consistently, because, you know, as much as we love Chris Middleton and he's been awesome this series, especially from downtown,
right,
you know, he is a guy that can't be taken out of a ball game somewhat easier, at least on paper, than Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the opposite has been true, and that's the one guy you cannot live or win this series without Giannis. And him being affected from an interior perspective is just such a bad look. I have this thing, whenever I see a box score with Giannis and he has to take like 5 threes, you know what's up.
Yeah.
Like, it's because he can't get it going inside. And to his credit, like, he's knocked them down, but it, yeah, that interior presence is just not being established. So I would like them to just force feed him initially and try to get Horford in foul trouble.
Yeah.
I think that's the way to go. And then when Aaron Baines or Daniel Tice or whoever comes in, or they move Marcus Morris to center, whatever, just take the Joel Embiid route. Just mm-hmm. foul the guy's ass out as right. soon as possible. I think that's the only way you can go forward. Now, I will say as much, Giannis did try to do that in game one. He really tried. He just got denied. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm not going to make a comment on the officiating, because I think there were just bad calls all throughout game one.
We'll save that for Rockets Warriors.
Oh, no. I mean, no, but my point is, I think Giannis got screwed. I think the Celtics got screwed on a lot of the calls. So I'm not like leaning towards one particular team getting, you know, a certain benefit.
Yeah.
It was just a badly called game one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So hopefully we see a Giannis breakout game. I would like to see that.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, he was much more aggressive in game two. And that was, you know, Bud coming out of game one was just like, we need to play harder, which is what Nick Nurse said after game three last night for the Raptors too. It's just like, we don't need to change anything necessarily. We just didn't, like, Boston outplayed us in terms of effort. Now, that was a complete smokescreen, because the Bucks, you know, we talked about going into the series, they've been playing this drop coverage with Brook Lopez all year. It's really effective because it limits looks at the rim, and they've tried to prevent corner threes, and they're all about forcing mid-range shots. Well, the Celtics are really good at mid-range shots. They have a lot of guys who can hit that. Horford, Kyrie, Jason Tatum. So in game one, that's what they did. They just picked them apart from mid-range and then got a bunch of open threes, a lot of above-the-break threes, and Al Horford, as always in the playoffs, just turns into, like, super Megazord Al Horford. In game two, though, they started switching everything, and it started to fluster Boston a little bit. So Bud's whole, like, we're not making adjustments thing was some nice gamesmanship from him. I liked it, because, you know, that has long been one of the criticisms of him, is that he isn't very adaptable in the playoffs. And if they lost game two at home, that series was over in four or five. I mean, he knew the stakes. He knew, like, that was as much of a must-win game as any game two possibly could be. Giannis, I think, was much more aggressive going to the basket. He had 18 free throw attempts that game compared to 10 in game one. Also,
which was still good.
Yeah, right. And, like, Middleton, I don't know what it is against the Celtics, but he just loves going supernova against this team. 7 of 10 from three-point range, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that was the same way last year, too.
Yeah.
He was ridiculous.
It's so good. I love it. But also, I mean, they did put Nico in the starting lineup in game two to give them more spacing, which I think helped. I think Bud made a lot of smart adjustments. Also, like, if you're the Celtics, you could rest on Kyrie Irving is not going 4 of 18 from the field again.
Right.
Hopefully. Or if he does, you're screwed either way.
Yeah.
Tatum's the interesting one, because he just hasn't done much in this series yet. I mean, he's 4 of 17 from the field, 4.5 points, 5.5 rebounds a game. Like, this is the guy that carried them within one game of the finals last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Jarks had a good column today at The Ringer about how he kind of needs to start emulating Chris Middleton. He's like, just look across the court, and you can see the type of guy you should be. Yes, you could be that primary scorer on a different team. Like, if he gets traded to the Pelicans this summer, he could be a 25-point-per-game scorer next year. But on a Celtics team where there aren't as many shots to go around, he needs to round out his game and contribute in other ways. Defense, rebounding, passing, which we just haven't seen yet. So I'm wondering if that changes at all. Or if that, I mean, who, I don't know.
I think it's a fair point. I will argue this, though. Tatum is not in the same stratosphere as a passer as Chris Middleton.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And Sharks is saying that. It was like Middleton in year two of his career was not where he is now. Like, he fought a lot of the same tendencies early on that Tatum did. He was just saying, like, that's the guy to model yourself after going forward if you're going to stay on the Celtics team.
If you're going to
still play with Kyrie and Horford and Brown and all the Hayward and all these other guys who also need to, you know, you're not going to get 30 shots on this team.
Okay, well, I need to check out that piece for sure.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
That was good.
It's a good idea. I mean, look, you can't really go wrong if you're Chris Middleton. Like, if you're emulating Chris Middleton. Like,
yeah.
Where's that weakness? Middleton is able to score on the block, pull up from mid-range, you know, stretch the court, get to the line. He can defend. He can rebound. He can play make. And he's a low turnover player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a what you call a low-volume superstar, right?
Yeah,
in that
for
sense.
Sure.
Like, and But yeah, I mean, obviously, he's still a supporting cast player because he's never going to be the leading man, nor should he be, because I don't think his game will support a significantly higher bump in volume. Tatum, it seems, is very hell-bent on that. Like, the Kobe thing seems to really be a thing with him.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it could go either way. I mean, and he's, what, 21?
Yeah.
Or 20, yeah.
Yeah.
So at some point, he could wake up one morning and go, you know what, I'd like to be a kind of Kobe Bryant, but I want to be more efficient.
Right.
I want to actually be a smarter Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
That would be a step forward. To turn back to game one, by the way. So Kyrie had those three just insane mid-range shots, remember?
Mm-hmm.
That were just, they were clean, and he didn't even see the basket.
Yeah.
In my opinion, those three shots changed game one.
Mm.
Because did you see how the Bucks reacted after each and every one of those shots?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were just like, oh, we did everything there.
Right.
Like that was so deflating. Like, he was running down the shot clock. They thought they had him, and then he just nailed it. It was cotton, right? I mean, whew. I think that's where it just flipped, because the Celtics are so good at feeding off of Kyrie. Like, when he's going, they just get a bunch of energy and they start going. And it seems like he's that emotional leader, which is weird to say considering, you know, the controversy earlier
right.
in the year.
Right.
But at least from an on-court perspective, when he gets going, everyone seems to follow suit.
Yeah.
So when he's struggling in game two, you know, there wasn't that added level of energy to go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't have, like, as many... Like, Raptors Sixers, I think there are some, like, clear schematic things that you could pick out so far what's changed from game one to game three and what do you expect in game four. I guess just because we have one fewer data point with the rest of these series, it's harder to say, and we'll get to Denver-Portland shortly, which is, I have no idea what to expect from that series. But yeah, like, this one, I mean, we saw the adjustments Bud made in game two. Boston is now coming back home. You can reasonably expect, I mean, role players, the theory is, always tend to shoot better at home, so you can probably expect bigger nights from the Marcus Morris and Terry Rozier types. You know, Rozier was 2 of 10 in game two, and a far cry from the guy who tore up the playoffs last year. I think I picked Bucks in six. Coming into this series, and I'm not gonna lie, after game one I was shook and I was like, oh my god, this is happening again, it's just everything is falling into place for Boston. I still want to stick with Bucks in six for now, but I could easily be talked into seven, and that, I mean, the Celtics could win this series. Like, I think the common theme through this first week of the second round is that pretty much every team, like, it wouldn't totally shock me if any of these teams emerge victorious, with the possible exception of Houston, but that's just because they're down 2-0. But, like, all of these other series still feel very up in the air. Even, like, Toronto-Philly. I know Philly smacked them in Game 3, But if Toronto comes back and wins game four, they steal home court back. If this game three win means nothing.
Yeah. There's none of these series that are just like outside of Golden State and Houston that are out of the realm or out of possibility for the team that's down. No, absolutely not. Here's the thing for me. You know, I've been talking about Giannis all season long. The mm-hmm. fact that you can replace Sterling Brown with Nikola Mirotic in the starting lineup
mm-hmm.
just further points to the flexibility that you have with Giannis. The fact that he's so positionless. Like, you effectively replaced a two guard with a power forward.
Mm-hmm.
And you just slid down Giannis to the three. And then Middleton to the two.
Mm-hmm.
Having those two guys with so much flexibility, Giannis especially, who can play five positions, I'm leaning on. That's the part that makes me believe that they'll come out victorious.
Yeah.
The fact that they have a superstar you can literally slot in at every position. Right. And then you have your secondary star you can slide in at, what, three positions at least?
Middleton, yeah. I think you could reasonably put him anywhere from two to four.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what it comes down to for me is the role players. Like, Ersan Ilyasova mm-hmm. needs to hit shot. Brook Lopez needs to be more of a factor. You know, Pat Connaughton shouldn't take seven shots a game.
right.
You know? Yeah, and Sterling Brown has shot 10% for the series. I mean, in 35 minutes, which is pretty big.
Yeah.
So you need the role players to step up. I would also like to see Eric Bledsoe going a little bit.
Mm.
Like, I want to see him take this matchup against Kyrie a little bit more personally.
Yeah. Well, especially given what Rozier did to him last year.
Oh, right, yeah.
It punked him.
Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Yeah, I think Bledsoe is taking it personally, and he did play a lot better in game two. I mean, he had, mm-hmm. 21.7, 12 shooting, 5 assists, 2 blocks.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he needs to really assert himself and make up for what happened last year. I think also Brogdon is out for game three, but it sounds like his return may be somewhat imminent. Now, it's unfair to expect him to come in and play 35 minutes a game right away. I don't think that's going to happen, but he could be a difference maker, whereas, we talked before the series about him being out versus Marcus Smart. Still doesn't sound like Marcus Smart is near a return. So I'm intrigued to see, no matter what happens in game three, if Brogdon comes back in game four. Like, all Milwaukee has to do is win one game in Boston, and they take home court back.
Yeah.
The pressure is right back on Boston to hold serve right now.
Well, I mean, again, because if Boston comes out and defends home court just in game three,
yeah.
and they do it convincingly,
yeah,
this context matters. But then again, we said that after game one. We were like, oh, the Bucks. Oh, no. So
maybe this
is going to be one of those weird series that we see every once in a while where it's like a blowout followed up by a blowout, and it just changes. Yeah.
The playoff yo-yo is so wild. It's like, I forget about it every year, but you just get so high after every win and so low after every loss. It's like, oh, season's over. We lost one game. And then two games later, it's like, we're winning five titles.
Yeah. Let's say the Bucks lose this series, right?
Yeah.
And let's say Giannis plays much like he has right now. So he finishes with, like, a 25 point average, 9 rebounds. So significantly less than in the regular season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hold that against him?
No.
Or do you look at that as being the moment where he takes that, a sense of desperation, or he just takes that and he wraps it into himself, and then he comes back next year and he's even an even bigger monster than he is this year.
Yeah, I think no matter if they don't win the title, however they go out, if he gets exploited in any way, he's going to use that as fuel the whole summer, and he's just going to come back even better next year. So I almost hope they do win the title so he gets complacent, which I don't think would happen. Even if they win the title, I think he's still going to come back better next year. But, like, I just hope that no team exploits his weaknesses like the Celtics did to Ben Simmons last year, because I think Giannis has proven over the past half decade he could just, like, evolve every offseason and become so much better. But I thought you were going to ask, if they lost this series, like, what do they do with their free agents? And I think No matter what, you got to bring the whole... You got to bring Middleton back. You got to bring most of these guys back, or else you're going to really piss off Giannis.
Yeah, they already re-signed Bledsoe, so... Right.
All right, let's move to Nuggets-Blazers now. Another one tied 1-1. The Nuggets... The first game, it was just funny because, like, we had seen a lot of kind of defensive slugfests, like really just hard-fought games in the first few games of the second round. And then Nuggets-Blazers is just like, everybody's jacking threes and everyone's hitting shots and no one's playing defense. But then game two was an actual slugfest between these two teams. 97-90, Portland wins, so they're going back to Portland, tied 1-1. This, as I said before, like, I don't know what adjustments Denver makes aside from like hit more open shots, because they missed so many in game two. But then at the same time, Portland couldn't get a rebound in the fourth quarter to save its life. I was just like, everything. Portland should have won that game by so much more, but Denver had like 20 plus offensive rebounds. It was 23. Yeah, it was like, I don't know what to take away from that game aside from, like, both of these things feel like such outliers. Like,
right.
I don't think Denver is going 6 of 29 from 3 again, but I also don't think they're going to pull in 23 offensive rebounds.
Exactly, and that's the way you should look at it. So basically, if you add those two up in your own way, you can say, well, you know, one, you know, kind of flattens out the other.
Yeah.
So the win, it's the rightful winner.
Right.
I'm digging this series.
Yeah.
I'm digging it. These are two teams I absolutely love to watch, and so I'm going to bring something up that I think is interesting. Right.
Okay.
I think Enes Kanter is proving now that you can actually, that we shouldn't be as low on scoring big men who play near the basket as we maybe are, you know, as an NBA community.
Right. Are you throwing shade at Billy Donovan for his can't play Kanter comments?
No, not necessarily, because in that context and during that series, I think there's definitely some truth to it. But it seems like that nowadays we kind of just, you know, turn our noses up at the sky for, you know, against big men who can give you like 20 and 10
right
on high efficiency, because remember Kanter can also hit free throws. He finishes with a high field goal percentage and free throw percentage, and we kind of poo-poo that kind of player. And I don't think we should. I think there, he's proven this, these playoffs when he's replaced Jusuf Nurkić, that he is a very, very capable basketball player. He has changed the entire face of the series against the Thunder, and I think his interior presence here against Denver has also been significant. I think it's time that we start giving those guys a little bit more respect.
Yeah. Well, so that's, I mean, Kanter has impressed me as well throughout the whole playoffs, really. Like, I thought when Nurkić went down, that was it for Portland, lights out. And Kanter has come in and played very well. He's earning himself a lot of money this summer. Totally agree with all of that. I do wonder if, like, these two series in particular, because Steven Adams is more of a traditional low post big, isn't a huge scoring threat, isn't a stretch five at all. And even Jokic, I know he's like so unconventional as a five, but he's still not a super quick guy. He's not going to crush you with post moves. He's going to beat you more as a passer. He can hit the three, but, you know, he's just not like fleet of foot like an Embiid or even an Al Horford. So I wonder if these are just two surprisingly good matchups for Kanter. And then if you look ahead to the next, like, say they get past the Nuggets and the Warriors are waiting in the next round, I think we're going to have a rude awakening with Kanter. But you're right. Like, in the playoffs are just all about matchups in general. And if you have a guy, like, Boban was great against the Nets, and he hasn't played a single minute in the last two games outside of garbage time, because he just matches up really poorly with the Raptors. If you've got a Kanter who matches up really well with some bigs and not well with others, that's fine. He still has value in those circumstances when he does match up well.
No, I agree entirely. I'm just looking at it because when you talk about players, especially centers that are maybe not, you know, strong defenders, right? And if they have a well-established offensive game and they can rebound, they're still providing you with two out of three major aspects that contributes to winning basketball, scoring and rebounding, both crucial elements. And what I'm arguing is we've reached a point now where if a big is not a unicorn or can't hit 40% from downtown, it's like, oh, he's not worth hanging on to. Want to give him the minimum. Like, it's, and I feel that's, I feel Cantor has really, you know, come out and proven that there is value. I get that it's matchup dependent.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree with you that he wouldn't average 20-8 against, you know, Clint Capella. Mm-hmm. And the Rockets, for example. I get that. But you can't convince me that he wouldn't get you like 15-11 and still a somewhat decent field goal percentage and getting to the line, like drawing fouls. My point is, you know, when you look at a guy like Greg Monroe, like, you know, if you gave him the minutes, I realize he's not necessary because they, you know, he's older. He's not as good as he was. But if you took it like a couple years back, you could have given him more minutes. Like, that type of player does still have value in the grand scheme of things.
You must not have seen his missed layup in game 3 that Jimmy Butler afterward put on a fake reporter voice and asked him, how did it feel to botch that layup? To which,
and that was exactly why I hesitated to say a couple years back. Yeah.
To which Monroe responded, you're going to get these hands. You're going to get me thrown out of the league for beating you up. But yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. Like, because even if Cantor, let's say they were attacking him more relentlessly with pick and rolls. And I think, again, these are two good matchups for him. Because against OKC, they were just dropping him back and daring Westbrook to shoot, which is fine. Like, that's great strategy. And against Denver, they're not a traditional 1-5 pick and roll team, because really they've run the inverse. They run a lot of 5-1 pick and rolls where Jokic is the ball handler or the passer. So again, like, it works out really well for him, but still, like, he deserves all of the credit for keeping them competitive in this series. And I mean, another guy who I did not see at all coming, I should have. Because, I mean, both of these teams are structured somewhat the same, at least in terms of, like, where their proportion of points are coming from. They have both really good backcourts. I mean, Portland's got the advantage there, but, like, Murray and Harris are both very good players and high scoring potential. They both expect a lot out of their center, and then they don't expect much out of their wings, whether it's Aminu or Harkless for Portland. Or, I mean, they've been starting Torrey Craig and Millsap. He's just kind of like an all-around guy. You're not necessarily expecting him to pour in a huge number of points, even Malik Beasley. But yeah, Rodney Hood's been great coming off the bench in this series.
He's been hitting shots. Yeah. That's the difference. Like, he was taking those shots as well against OKC, and they weren't dropping at the same rate. And this is one of my points regarding shot making. Mm-hmm. Like, he is one of those guys who'll get minutes if his shot is falling.
Yeah.
And if it's not, you just put him back, you know, on the bench, and that's fine. Like, he's one of those guys. And right now, he's hitting, and it's opening up the court for everyone. And to be fair, that's also benefiting Cantor. So, you know, Hood has had an effect there. Now, if Alvaro Aminu starts hitting shots, because he was great against OKC. Mm-hmm. Like, if he starts mimicking that series again, now we're cooking if you're Portland.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so here's the question going into game 3, is there were a number of notable casualties in game 2. Harkless sprained his ankle. Torrey Craig broke his nose and was bleeding everywhere, and then comes out like Bane an hour later in the mask. And he played in game 2. I'm assuming he's playing in game 3. Even Jamal Murray, it looks like he has a thigh, presumably a contusion, just like a thigh bruise that he suffered in round 1 and then aggravated in game 2. He's kind of limping down the floor, but you got to assume he's going to play too. Mm-hmm. So Denver should be at full strength in terms of personnel. Now, Craig may be affected by the mask, or Murray may be affected by the thigh or whatever. If Harkless can't go, what do you do if you're Portland? Jake Lehman took his minutes and started the second half of game 3. Do you stick with him? Do you go with Hood in the starting lineup? Do you go Evan Turner? What do you do?
I go with Seth Curry, man. Ooh. I go super small.
Ooh.
I go Dame, Seth Curry, CJ at the 1, 2, and 3.
Interesting.
Because, you know, Seth has not shot well this series. He's only taken 7 shots so far, like 2 of 7, mm-hmm. but very, very small sample size. But he's one of those guys who can get extremely hot extremely quickly. And if you have 3 guys running around in circles just jacking up threes and hitting them in Dame, CJ, and Seth, and then you have Hood coming in off the bench. I don't want to bring him into the starting lineup. I think they need that punch off the bench.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think he'll do just fine. And if, yeah, Moe Harkless, you lose defensive intensity. Mm-hmm. Like, he was really good against OKC as well.
Yeah.
And I think he's a, you know, he was starting to round out his game a little bit here against Denver. He wasn't doing anything high volume, but when he was taking shots, it was aggressively. He was, you know, even playmaking a little bit. So he's actually a bigger loss than most make it out to be.
For sure.
And he's also a switchy wing, so you lose that by, yeah, Curry or Hood, who's not a switchy wing defensively. Yeah. Jake Layman, I don't think is a great defender either. Evan Turner used to be. Now he's basically what we talked about, like, in terms of the center who could score but not defend, just the wing version of that because right. he can't shoot.
Right.
So yeah, I would go with Seth Curry because he's not a high volume minutes player. So yeah. you can afford to take him into the starting lineup and still keep your bench unit somewhat intact.
Yeah, it's interesting. I agree with you. You got to keep Hood and the scoring punch coming off the bench.
Right.
And I like Turner coming off the bench just because he's better with the ball in his hands and you don't want to have him clashing with Dame and CJ. So it
right.
it really does come down to Layman or Curry, I guess. And the whole point is, like, that could end up swinging a game or two in the series if Harkless misses. Like, that you said it yep. well. That is a sneaky big loss for them. All in all, this one just feels like it's going 7. Like, I have no read on this series whatsoever, but
I would love that.
Yeah.
That's fine. Because, you know, even though they didn't hit shots in game 2, it's good basketball.
Yeah.
Like, the execution of this, or rather, the setup was good. The execution just lacked in terms of hitting, converting the shots. But, like, these are two very, very smart basketball teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say all 4 of these series in the second round have been really fun so far and have been living up to expectations. I know it's early still.
Well, I disagree with you on the series that we're about to talk about.
Okay. Well, let's just go into that then. Warriors, Rockets. The Warriors are up 2-0. Mm-hmm. The big story coming out of Game 1 was the officiating. There have been Sam Amick of The Athletic and then Zach Lowe and I believe Ramona Shelburne of ESPN both published stories afterward about how the Rockets have been tracking this for at least since last Western Conference Finals, but I think even right. before that you know, they've gone back. You guys know how, like, the last 2-minute reports get released publicly. The NBA has a full, like, 48-minute report for teams that request it. So the Rockets requested them for all of the Western Conference Finals last year and found that, like, they were at a double-digit points deficit in terms of missed calls in 6 of the 7 games. They were complaining a lot after Game 1 about the whole landing space idea where, you know, James Harden takes a 3 and then they close out on him and you got to give him space to land, but he's also kicking out his legs and landing 3 feet ahead of where he
yawn,
shot it.
Yeah. Yawn, yawn.
Yeah. So at least in Game 2, officiating wasn't the story. Instead, it was Draymond's bear paw scratching James Harden's eye inadvertently, yeah. him having vision troubles. And, you know, he did come back to his credit and actually played pretty well. Like, he was mm-hmm. still hitting step back threes, even though he couldn't see the basket, which is kind of absurd.
Yeah. That's full on absurd.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, these have been 2 close wins for the Warriors, but they mm-hmm. have won both. This is, so going into Game 3, this is it for the Rockets. If they don't win this one, this thing's over in 5.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't enjoy this series solely because of all the reffing debate, because it's all the time, even during the telecasts.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm this close to just muting every Houston Rockets Golden State game henceforth.
You totally should.
Yeah, I really should. It's I am so tired of the debate. I think it's ruining the series.
Yeah.
I'm not enjoying it because every single time I watch these teams, like even in the regular season, it's always about the officiating. Just shut the F up. I mean, and you know, I get that Daryl Morey is upset, and you know, I think it's fair that, you know, Houston is upset about, you know, they feel that they lost game seven last year because of bad calls. Mm-hmm. Like, I would understand that. But at the end of the day, you know, teams get screwed out of calls all the time. Like, yeah. It's perfectly normal, unfortunately. It shouldn't be, but the officiating crew is, you know, is still human. And I realized that I ragged on them for game one against, you know, Bucks Celtics, but that went both ways. And I'm still a firm believer that when it comes to like the loss of averages, I don't think, you know, a certain team is ultimately screwed out of calls more than anyone else.
Right. So I've been trying to think of a way to phrase this, and I might screw it up, so I apologize in advance, but the Rockets' whole strategy is to have Harden draw fouls, which makes sense because he's a great free throw shooter, first of all, and he can even, you know, he hits a lot of these three and ones, which is great. But you're putting that into someone else's hands. Like, you're putting your fate into the hands of the referees. Whereas if you just focus on actually making shots, you control your own fate more, which is,
right.
You know, I don't want this to be the Warriors play the basketball the right way debate. Like, I saw Marcus Thompson of The Athletic tweeted that about, he has a story about, like, Steph Curry isn't like Harden. He doesn't complain about the refs. And everyone's like, 3 weeks ago, he literally called the referee the MVP while he was whining about missed calls in the post-game press conference.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Both of these teams are whiny. And you're right. Like, the officiating storyline has prevailed a lot throughout this series. I mean, it was not a good sign when the morning of game two, Rockets Warriors, Scott Foster is trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what the NBA wants. And I think to their credit, the refs did a very good job calling game two pretty fairly. Like, I agree, game one, there were a couple times where even I was like, ooh, they did infringe upon his landing spot. And I think they were much better about that in game two. But I don't know. It just feels like if you're kind of just tempting the fates here. Like, you're relying on referees to call the game a certain way. And if they don't, it gives you something to complain about later. But you're still relying on someone else to do something in your favor.
Right.
I don't know. It's worked for them. It's gotten them this far. But I think the Warriors also deserve a lot of credit in this series. Like, Draymond Green looks like prime Draymond Green in this series.
I don't know what's going on there. Like, where did that come from? What about an Icky as well? Yeah. You know what? It's so typical because I wrote a piece on my Danish Patreon where I was like, you know what? It's time. Like, it's time to move on from Iggy, because he's just gotten older. And I do think he has slowed down athletically.
Sure.
He has. Yeah. I mean, But he's just kind of found himself a little second win there here in the second round.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's been very, very good. I'm the fact that he's averaging 15 points a game,
mm-hmm.
I did not know that he had that in him, because he's been more or less a complete and utter non-scorer since practically joining the Warriors.
Yeah.
I mean, this came out of nowhere, given his age. Like, he's, what, 35?
Yeah. I think it comes back to the 82-game player versus the 16-game player, and I think the Warriors have a bunch of 16-game players. I think they've won so many titles in the last few years. They've been to the finals four straight years. It's hard to get motivated for a game against the Phoenix Suns in the middle of January when you're the Warriors. Like, they suffer a lot of bad, unfocused losses during the regular season, because after you're coming off winning two straight rings, you're not thinking about the middle of January. You're thinking about June. You're thinking about June the entire time, and you're just trying to pace yourself through and stay healthy and just make sure you make it to the playoffs in one piece. So now, even in the first round, you know, the Clippers take them to six games, and everyone's like, what's wrong with the Warriors? the Warriors. It's always the Warriors versus themselves. Like, they have the best top-end talent in the league. They are the two-time defending champions. When they are focused, they are the best team, bar none. And because of what happened in the Western Conference Finals last year, I think Houston has their respect more than any other team in the West. I would assume they'll respect whoever comes out of the East, just because the East has a lot of good teams this year. But like, Houston had their attention from game one tip-off. They knew this series is the de facto Western Conference Finals. Like, if they win this series, whoever they play, I think it's going to be funny if they win this series in like 4 or 5 games, and then the Western Conference Finals goes to like 6 or 7 just because they're unfocused again. Like, they, you know, I think they're going to start dicking around again in the next series and like lose a game just because they're not locked in. But they are locked the F in on this series. And Kevin Durant in particular, ever since his whole like, you know who I am, I'm Kevin Durant. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, we got the reminder, KD. Thank you. Yeah. You know, he's averaging like 30, I think almost close to 40 points a game over his last 5 or so games.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Late 30s at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I love that he had to go that route. Like, here's the thing. You and I, and I'm patting, I'm patting ourselves on the back here. I am. I'm patting us on the back. We have been consistently saying throughout the past 2 years, at the very least, that KD is still the same player.
Yeah.
Just because he made the decision of going to Golden State, which, you know, you can say whatever you want about that. He's still one of the, at worst, top 5 players in the league.
Yeah.
At worst.
Yeah.
And absolutely one of the top 2, if not the best, raw scorer in the league.
Yep.
And for some reason, everyone seems to just be down on him, going, well, you had to join up with this team to be effective. Like, no, you put Kevin Durant on any team in this league and he would be buckets.
Right.
Buckets. He's always this good. And at the end of the day, I think right now he's trying to assert himself, and to the point where the Warriors go as far as he wants them to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's actively trying to overshadow Steph Curry, but if he is, then it's a pretty good thing that Curry doesn't care.
Oh, that is a fun conspiracy theory.
No, I mean, what I'm just trying to point out that, you know, Curry has been the headliner for so long.
Yeah.
Everyone's been using this narrative that you'll never get the same love here as, you know, as Steph, yada, yada, yada. And I think Durant is kind of giving people a big, you know, middle finger and going, you know what? I can do this just as well as the 6'3" guy.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been unstoppable in this series, and he's really kept them in. I mean, there were a couple times, especially in game one, where it looked like the Rockets were really starting to generate momentum, and he just has the impeccable timing of any time they're about to start going, or it looks like they're about to start going on a run, it's just like, okay, I'm going to take over.
Yeah.
I'm not letting you get momentum here. I mean, Steph hasn't shot that well in this series. 11 of 28 overall, 6 of 23 from 3. If not for KD, they're probably going to Houston down 0-2.
Yeah. That's the most frightening thing. They've made just 9 threes a game.
Yeah.
On average over the first 2 games.
Yeah.
And they're up 2-0. Yeah. Like the Warriors of all teams.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're sitting pretty. Yeah. Because when they start hitting like just a regular percentage, that's game over. Now, you actually touched on something that I just want to close this pot off with. You said that they had, you know, Houston's, you know, respect.
Mm-hmm.
That they respected Houston, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, and they may not respect, you know, Portland or Denver. Mm-hmm. That's coming out of the other series. I think that feeling's mutual. I think we've reached a point now where other Western Conference teams, especially like the ones like Denver and Portland, are like, you know what? We don't care about Golden State anymore. We've heard about Golden State for 4 years.
Mm.
I don't care anymore. I'm coming out there and I'm beating the living snot out of them. Like, that Western Conference Finals, assuming, you know, as they should, Golden State moves on.
Right.
I think you called it. I think that's going to be an absolute dogfight, regardless of who they meet, Portland or Denver.
it's hard to say just because especially Denver got waxed a lot by Golden State in the regular season, but especially I think the last two matchups they had Boogie and he was healthy and Boogie took it to Jokic. So like the Warriors are super top heavy right now. It's it's the Hamptons five, it's a little bit of Livingston and Looney, and that is it.
Yep.
So they are playing with fire a little bit, but this is also how it goes in the playoffs. Your rotations get shortened and depth is not as important as it is during the regular season if you have the top end talent to, you know, play 40 plus minutes a game. Like KD's right. averaging 43.6 in this series.
Klay Thompson, and what does that say about Jordan Bell?
Yeah.
That's not great.
No. Jordan, it says Jordan Bell should, I hope he's renting. Not, I hope he didn't buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously Rockets game three, this is a must win for them. Do you think they pull it off and make this closer, more competitive, or do you think the Warriors go up 3-0?
I think Houston will probably take game three, then they'll drop game four, and then it's series over.
Lights out in five.
Yeah, I think so.
It's yeah, I mean, it, I want this thing to go longer, and I want the referee controversy to just
go away.
Yeah, move further in the past so we can enjoy the basketball. Because it really has been high-level basketball from both teams other than the whiny. But unfortunately, there's a lot of whining here. So I'm with you in saying the Rockets take game three. And I mean, maybe that's naive. Like, I think the Warriors are going to go into that game three knowing, like, this is our chance to put our foot on their throat. Like, if we go up 3-0, it's over. But if we go up 2-1, it's suddenly a series again. So I think game three is going to be a war zone for both teams. But
what network airs game three? Is it still ESPN?
I believe... no, it might be ABC. It is ABC.
It's ABC. Oh, yeah. But it's like Mark Jackson and...
Oh, yeah, I think so. Mute?
Yeah.
Put it on mute.
Yeah, because you know what? Just the fact that they're on the mic, that means the whole reffing controversy is going to be brought up for like 48 minutes.
For sure. Yeah. Yep. And then Mark's going to talk about, oh, well, when I was the coach of Golden State, they could have done this and this and this. It's like, okay, Mark. That's
We get it. Yeah. By the way, when are they going to make Doris Burke like call the games and stuff, Mark?
Oh. Like just, it could not happen soon enough.
Right?
I wanted the Lakers to hire Mark Jackson just so they were forced into it, but
and also because that would be funny as hell.
Right. Selfishly, so I could also get more Doris Burke in my life.
Speaking of, let's finish the pod with that news story. Like, Ty Lue apparently looking like the new Lakers head coach, which... Yep. And then Monty Williams to Phoenix.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for Monty. That's a great hire.
Yeah.
Who do you think the Suns will hire next year?
Yeah, I know. Well, at least he got a 5-year deal, so he's going to get paid for at least like 2 or 3 years not to coach, which is pretty sweet. It's a good deal. Yeah. I have no faith in Bob Sarver. In theory, they have the talent. They have another high pick this year. It could be a good situation. I have no faith that he's going to keep his hands off, so... I wish Monty nothing but the best. He's by all accounts, he's one of the best guys in the NBA. I hope he has a lot of success there. I'm nervous for him, but at least he avoided the Lakers mess.
Yeah. That's the first thing I thought about as well.
Yeah. It's pretty damning. Joining a team owned by Bob Sarver is more enticing than joining the Lakers right now. That's not great.
Yeah. That's a good way of ending the pod, I think.
Yeah. I think so too. So we will be back next week with more reaction from the second round. Let's just hope that all four of these series go seven. Or really, I want the Sixers-Raptors to be over in five because my heart can't take it. But the other three, please go seven. These have been really fun. Hope you guys are enjoying it. Follow us on the NBA pod, at the NBA pod on Twitter. You'll get all of our new episodes there. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, work on a Joel Embiid celebration for me for our next episode. I want...
Oh, yeah, I'll ask Bruce to do that instead.
Okay, good. Yeah, airplane wings, the Steph shimmy, the rock the baby. We got all of them last night.
I'll ask Bruce to just dance because he'll come up with something crazy, and then I'll definitely DM you that video.
Good, and then I'll DM it to Embiid, and then he will break it out in game four. Perfect.
Oh, because you're just sliding into his DMs like...
Yeah, casually.
Yeah. Okay, nice.
All right, catch you later, man.
You too, man.